Mihi Nui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. It's 5 minutes past nine, and you're listening to Keep Auckland Beautiful on 104.6 Planet FM. I'm going to jump straight in because I have an interview that goes the full 30 minutes with Amanda Chapman from WasteFreeland.nz. Good morning, Amanda, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, Amanda, you've been on an incredible journey over the last few years, and like a lot of my guests, you're big into the waste-free space, and I guess that's really where it all started for you, was it?
Yeah, I guess yes and no. I started the whole waste-free thing about 3 and a bit years ago, but I actually studied environmental science and physical geography before that, so it's kind of one of those things that grew quite organically to end up down that whole waste-free path.
Right, because we're going to talk about a few things over the interview, your tiny house, the community fridge you're involved with, but did it all kind of begin with you yourself in the house looking after your own, going on your own waste-free journey?
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it all started, but once I started this whole journey, it sort of all fell into place, and I was like, oh yeah, this all makes sense. I used to do this during uni or et cetera, et cetera. I think it was just one of those things that I had sort of unconsciously been doing for years, and then suddenly could kind of, I guess, almost put a label to it, but also realize that was a movement that was happening.
Right. So it actually took on an articulation. It went from being something you just did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So it started in your own house, your own journey, just looking at auditing your own waste, trying to be waste-free, replacing cosmetics and cleaning stuff and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think the first place that I tackled was the one I was sort of the most concerned about, which was the kitchen. This was in during Plastic Free July, like 3 years ago.
Right.
Starting to buy all my groceries without packaging, and then slowly from there I expanded to the bathroom and cosmetics. That one was a bit harder just because I had quite a lot of stuff that I was still using up. It's just amusing. I'm not someone that's really into cosmetics, but the amount of cosmetics that I had, it was quite a significant amount considering I'd never really used them.
It's an eye-opener when you actually open your eyes and look at it and go,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Wow.
I was like, why do I have all this makeup? And I think a lot of it was just sort of part of the expectations of being a young female and getting cosmetics for Christmas or presents, and then also the expectations on myself. When I went to America, for instance, I was like, oh, makeup's cheap here, I should buy a bunch of makeup. But it was just quite amusing that, you know, a year later, I was like, why did I buy all that makeup? I don't need makeup.
Right.
So, you know, once I started this whole waste-free journey, I really evaluated all this, and I was like, okay, well, do I need to buy this stuff, and, you know, can I do without? And so it was quite amusing just to think of that switch from when I had been in America a year or two previously, shopping heaps, and then suddenly being like, you know, I didn't need to do all that. It was just kind of felt that it was something I should do because it was in a place where things were cheap.
Yeah, it's funny how we just fall into those rhythms, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so true. Like, I actually haven't bought any brand new clothing since that trip, which was, 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, a lot of people start with the kitchen, and it's logical because there's a lot of easy wins to get in the kitchen.
Yeah, and that's where the majority of waste comes from. Like, I was already composting, so that had been taken care of, so that wasn't an issue, but it was just all food packaging. That was the majority of my waste, was just food packaging.
There you go. Now, am I right that you're in... did you just wrap up your year of rubbish, or have you just started it in 2018?
Well, I've just kind of been consistently doing waste-free for like the last 3 years. And then at the end of each year, I would sort of do a little blog post tallying my year of rubbish.
Ah, I see. Okay, yeah. So a bit of a self-audit and reflection.
Yeah, exactly. But it is something I am quite wary of doing because it is really hard to be. When I first started the journey, I was really hard on myself. And if somebody gave me a piece of plastic, I really beat myself up about it. But now I'm just kind of like, well, you know, I'm doing everything I can. It's not my fault. And I just need to, you know, do what I can, start those conversations and not beat myself up if somebody gives me a plastic fork or whatever.
Sure. Like, sure. Yeah. And of course, they're doing it with the best of intentions.
Exactly. And it starts with starting that conversation and whatnot. But I was thinking about it just this morning. So last night I had a really late night chocolate craving. I'm like a mean chocolate fiend, and I usually buy the trade-aid chocolate, which is in compostable packaging.
Right.
But there was nothing open, so I had to go to the dairy. And my options were either the little bars of Cadbury or Nestle, or a block of Cadbury, which is in plastic, or a block of Whittaker's.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to weigh this one up, and with Cadbury, that's in plastic packaging, but it can be soft plastic recycled.
Sure.
And with Whittaker's, the inner foil, the gold part, that's actually a composite material of plastic and paper, and it can't be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm standing there, and I was like, okay, well, here's my options. But I decided to go with Whittaker's because I was like, well, Whittaker's, we all know Whittaker's tastes better. And Whittaker's is a New Zealand brand, and Cadbury's has got so many, had so many dramas lately, you know, with them moving overseas. And then also, I think they've decided to no longer be fair trade certified and all that. So I decided to go with the Whittaker's, and I'm like, well, years ago, I really would have beat myself up about this and been like, oh my God, I've just created this huge piece of landfill for my chocolate craving. But it's like, you just kind of have to be realistic about what you can actually do.
There you go.
Yeah, it's just quite an interesting conundrum. I think it goes the same with buying organic. A lot of the time, organic products are in plastic packaging. And yeah, you're really given all these sort of, don't go for the ethical option, the organic option, or the zero waste option.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think it is. It's quite a difficult thing for a consumer to have to process all that.
Well, particularly when we have busy lives and we've already got a ton of things on our brain, the last thing we want to do is argue with ourselves over whether we should buy the organic that's wrapped in plastic or the sprayed stuff right next to it that's not.
Mm. Exactly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's definitely something that I've learned to sort of be more realistic about.
Well, I think that's part of the journey. You know, from all the people I've spoken to who've been on this path, they've all kind of come around to that being pure as the driven snow can drive you purely insane if you let it.
Exactly. And it's the same with everyone I know. That's exactly it, because it's just not sustainable for yourself long term. If you're just going to deprive yourself from everything,
That's right.
Not fair on yourself. And it's easy for you just to give up and just go back to, well, I'm just going to go back to the convenience of buying everything full-blown in plastic.
Right.
You have to find a middle ground.
There you go. Well, speaking of deprivation, I'll just hook on to that word. You were, because I'm segueing into another topic here, very skillfully, as you can tell. You are the founder, and are you currently running New Zealand's first community fridge?
Yeah, so I set that up, and it's been running for nearly 2 years, a year and a half now. And actually, it very recently just changed hands to, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the site it's at the Griffin's Gardens, but there's now an information hub there. So the person that works at that information hub is employed by Auckland Council, and they've just taken that on to be the volunteer coordinator.
Awesome. But tell me about the concept of a community fridge.
So the community fridge is based on, there's a whole bunch in Europe which are also called solidarity fridges or people's fridges. And it's basically a fridge in a public space that anyone can use that basically redistributes surplus food. And so there's a whole bunch of different ways that that can be done, as opposed to, you know, how that's run, and they all have different rules. So it's quite interesting comparing how the different fridges work. But yeah.
So how does this one work?
So, yeah, this was the first one in New Zealand, and I set it up in end of 2016, November, December, with funding from Auckland Council's Love Food Hate Waste Fund, and with a lot of help from Jenny Marshall from Wasteman.
Yep.
And we basically wanted to make the whole thing just really legit, because it was the first one in New Zealand. We wanted,
sure.
We did a full food control plan, which we didn't need to do because we weren't selling food, but we did that just so that when the media sort of, you know, picked up on this, they were like, okay, no, this is okay, and just to help people feel comfortable using it
and get over that initial conceptual hump.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's been running for a year and a half, and we've not had any issues with it. So it's open 24/7. It's in a very public space. It's it's got a little shelter around it just to keep it out of the weather. In the Griffith Gardens, which is like by the Civic. And it's just a fridge. It's a fridge that we got from the inorganic collection that got fixed up for us. And basically anyone can use it, and you just take whatever food you want from there, and you can leave whatever food you want. So it's mostly serviced by the supermarket. So there's New World and Metro and a couple of other cafes, and we have volunteers that go and collect that food at the end of the day and take it to the fridge. But there's also a signage on the fridge saying, if you want to leave food in here, this is what you can leave. And so we get a lot of donations from people's gardens or food that people have had in their pantry that is unopened and they were gifted and they were never going to use. But we've also had quite a few church groups go out and buy food for the fridge in the evenings or on the weekends. And it's just a really beautiful thing to see it in use. And it's quite funny because I set it up so long ago, but it just so quickly became something of the public sphere, and, you know, something that wasn't, I guess, that I felt I was responsible for, because everybody just wanted to be involved and to look after it. And like when we first did the trials, which was only a month, all the volunteers was just my friends and I. And
sure.
Then we shut it. Yeah, so it was very something I was very much controlling and looking after, and was quite a big project for me. And then after it was shut down, I decided, like, how am I going to keep this running? We put a call out for volunteers, and now there's just so many volunteers who are involved and help out. And some of them, that they go and they do the fridge duty like every day. They're just so many amazing people. And
so it's
just within.
So it's taken on a life of its own.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then like within the community, it's like just everyone sees it, and it's just such a really cool thing that Auckland has. And since that one's been set up, there's now been more fridges set up across New Zealand, and there's a few more opening in Auckland soon. There was one that opened in Avondale just a couple of weeks ago. And then there's one in New Brighton and Christchurch. And I know that there's a couple being planned for Wellington as well, which the City Council is actually funding, which is pretty exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've birthed a big baby now. It's taking over and growing up, isn't it?
Yeah, it has, and that's why it's quite funny when people ask me about it. I'm just kind of like, this doesn't really feel like it's my thing anymore. It's just kind of something I did so long ago, and now has a full life of its own.
Sure.
Yeah,
well, but
really cool.
But there's still pride in being the midwife for such an awesome community project, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, take a bow. Seriously, that's fabulous.
Yeah, and it was quite great to sort of lay the groundwork for it. And Jenny and I put together a guide as to all of our learning from our month's trial and everything we learned, that if you're going to set up a community fridge, this is what you need to do. And we can provide these documents to anyone that's actually interested in setting up a fridge. So, yeah, if anyone wants that information, can get in touch with myself or Love Food Hate Waste. And we have a very big folder of documents, including the graphics from the front of the fridge and all of the rules that we came up with and our food control plan.
Sure, sure. So how much food goes through that fridge or did go through the fridge when you were there doing it regularly?
Well, that's the thing. It's so hard to say. Like, the numbers are just phenomenal. And one of the things I really wanted was not to have a register for the food. So a couple of the fridges overseas, which I think are run by councils, do have a logbook. So you sign in that you dropped off an apple or that you picked up an apple.
Right.
They really didn't want that because it felt like a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And so
sure.
So we just left it so that, you know, you can just take food, whatever you want.
No questions asked.
Exactly.
Get in
no
there questions. And tuck in.
Exactly. But we do, like, when we drop off the donations, there's been a few times that I've gone to the fridge and the donations from the cafe has been in there and the fridge is completely full. And I was like, ooh, okay, this could be problematic because I'm going to go pick up donations from New World. And so I'll come back 20 minutes later and the fridge is completely empty.
And right.
And so I'm like, okay, well, there's that problem solved. And so then I fill the fridge again. And then, yeah, the turnover in the fridge is crazy. Like, food does not sit in there long.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so great that the majority of it is food that would otherwise go to waste or be thrown out.
Right. So you've got supermarkets as partners, cafes as partners, and of course,
yeah.
And of course, members of the public and community groups like churches and schools and other.
Yes.
That is fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on that, because long may that project live.
Yeah.
And the whole Love Food Hate Waste thing, which is more than community fridges, of course. I think they just released their first cookbook, their family meal planner.
Yes.
And
I was at a workshop the other day and somebody mentioned the cookbook and so many people in the audience had heard of it and were like, yes, the cookbook's amazing. So I really love what Love Food Hate Waste are doing.
I do too. And, you know, I downloaded the cookbook even though I live alone. And these are meal plans for, you know, a household of four, a family of four.
Yeah.
But I still went through them and 'cause all the principles are the same.
Yeah.
But as per usual, you know, you have to adjust them when you live singly, because the whole world is actually built for, you know, multiple member households.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think it's fabulous. Now their website is lovefoodhatewaste.nz, isn't it?
I think so.
Google Love Food Hate Waste, you'll find it. There's no doubt about it. But your website, just before we go on to the next topic, is wastefreeland.nz, right?
Yes, that's it.
And I've had a reasonable nosy around, and not only does it talk about your waste-free journey, but it talks about the community fridge, it talks about your tiny house, which we're going to talk about in a moment, as well as some musings of your own about travel and tramping and all those sorts of things, hey?
Yeah. So that was my blog that I started 3 years ago. And so if you go really far back, there's some pretty badly written, rambly posts about how hard it was to begin the zero waste journey. So,
sure.
Yeah, if you go on there and see the first post being like, my year of trash, don't feel daunted.
Well,
it was
a
very long journey.
But the truth is you would feel solidarity. If you're just starting out on your waste-free journey, you're probably feeling those same feelings and frustrations,
yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
So actually, it's probably a good thing to have just an honest, unvarnished rant available.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's so true. Like with tramping, it's really hard to go tramping and traveling without producing trash. So that's
yes.
One that is quite a challenge for me.
Yes, because you want everything to be convenient when you tramp. It's all about convenience food and making it as light as possible. Yep. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So actually, transitioning again, I want to talk about your tiny house because this is kind of one of your more recent projects.
Yeah, I guess so. It's something that I had been planning since the beginning of last year, but it's one of those things that I was planning for ages and not really knowing if I actually would do it. And then one day I was just like, yeah, you know what, I am going to do this. I'm going to go and put the deposit down on the trailer and just do it. So it's been quite an interesting journey, and I'm still got a long way to go because I'm fumbling my way through, not really knowing how to build.
Sure. Build so how close to finished are you?
So I have a weathertight shell at the moment.
Okay.
That part was actually surprisingly quick to do, mostly because I use steel framing and I use corrugated iron cladding and sort of easy materials to work with, because I just don't have any building experience. But now I'm sort of stuck on the more technical side where I'm need to do the electrical, and I'm wanting to, it all to be completely off-grid, and so now I'm having to figure out how to set up solar and solar panels and batteries and inverter, and it's all very expensive, I'm finding, which is quite interesting. So,
it's got
a long way to go.
But that's all right. And so what inspired that? Was this kind of that downsizing feeling, or what inspired the tiny house in the first place?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. I think sort of at the core of it was the fact that I had been renting for a very long time and had lived in a lot of houses. I actually lost count, but I think just a few years ago I had already lived in more houses than my age, and I'm in my mid-20s, so...
Whoa, okay.
Well, I'm in my late 20s now, but yeah, it was just that not having that sort of sense of security and moving house and constantly renting, and then just Auckland's housing market at the moment is...
It's diabolical.
We all know what that's like.
We do. We don't have to dissect that, because I think it's been well dissected on other shows, eh?
Yes.
But this is your response to it.
Yeah, and I just really love the idea of being fully self-sufficient and, living a smaller footprint. And I love tiny houses. I just started watching heaps of tiny house tours on YouTube, as I think most people get into them.
Sure.
Especially Bryson's channel, Living Big in His Tiny House. He's a New Zealander, so the majority of his tiny house tours are in New Zealand, so... that was pretty exciting to see that and know that that movement was happening in my own country. And, just seeing what some of the people were doing, because at first you watch them and you're like, that's so cool, I probably couldn't live in that. And then watching more of them and thinking about it and thinking about how you use your space, and you're like, actually, I probably could live in this. So, it just sort of grew from that.
Well, there you go. I'm very curious, and I'm getting very philosophical here, because kind of what inclines me towards a tiny house is the idea of autonomy.
Mm.
And having my own place separate, because I too am renting, and kind of going, oh God, I'd really rather own my own place.
Yes, this is very relatable. This is definitely another thing. Like, I was living in a very big house with 5 or 6 flatmates, so... can understand why I was like, be great to have my own space.
Well, yes, and that's a different kind of autonomy where you don't literally have to accommodate 4 others just to do the basic bits of every day, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
And even just small things, like if you want to make a change to something, you can't do that in most rentals. You don't have that control over the property. You can't really make it feel like your home.
Right. And so how portable? I'm looking at the photo of the trailer that you've started with. That looks fairly portable to me. Like, if you really wanted to move house, you could put the tires back on the trailer, take it off the block, take it off the blocks and drive away.
Yeah. So it's a pretty big trailer. And once the tiny house is on it now, it is somewhat portable. So the trailer is 7.2 meters long, and then the outside of the tiny house is 2.5 meters, and so it's all done to the road requirements of the trailer.
Yes.
And so I've got to keep the weight down and be really aware of towing and where I'm putting things and the weight distribution of the trailer. So that's been quite an interesting thing I've had to factor into the build, which is also why I did steel framing, and just little decisions like that. If I want to use something, I'm like, how much does this weigh? So, yeah, theoretically it is fairly portable. I guess the problem is once you start going off-grid and you've got things like a solar setup and water tanks and a grey water garden, then, you know, it takes a bit more organisation to be portable.
Sure, sure. And that's kind of why I was asking, because you started with a trailer frame, which is where most people start. And and to me, the debate has always been, am I building a tiny house that's fixed, or am I building a tiny house that I can actually pick up and move?
Mm.
You know, when I sit down and daydream about building my own tiny house, those I get stuck there often. How portable can I be? Do I want to be?
Yeah, and that is definitely one of the first things you need to think is, how you plan on using the tiny house. If you're building a tiny house to travel, then you want to build something really small. But if you're building a tiny house that you don't plan on moving very often and you want to actually live in, then you can go for something a little bit bigger.
Right. So how tall is your tiny house, like the interior as opposed to off the ground, because you've got the trailer bit underneath?
Yeah. I've just blanked on what the regulations are. I think it's 3.55 meters, or is it 4.55 meters? I've actually just blanked on
That's all right.
And
that's all right, because it looks pretty tall to me, and I'm thinking you've got a pretty good loft up there, don't you?
Yeah, so it's to the trailer regulations,
sure,
of height, and then I've got a monopitch or shed roof, so it's not the gable roof which meets in the middle. It's the high part. Mine has a high part to one side and then floats, so which gives it a bit more room, I guess, inside and climbing up the staircase. I can't quite stand in the loft though, but it is pretty tall. The bottom level is the kitchen level. I think is 2.2 meters in height.
That's quite generous.
Yeah, it is, and so I did slightly less height in the loft, but there's still quite a bit of space in the loft. And if I was really clever, I could have actually dropped part of the floor down so that you could walk along one side of the loft.
Right.
But
yeah.
I'm not that clever. So.
That's all right. And this might be your first tiny house. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. In retrospect, there's lots of things I would have done differently.
Right. So are you planning on living in Auckland? Staying in Auckland and living in it?
Yes, ideally I'd actually love to stay living in central Auckland. So that would be quite interesting, because I know a lot of people in tiny houses do end up having to go a bit further out to find space. It seems that West Auckland is quite a bit of a hub for tiny houses. But I know where, like, I work in the Mindfully Bridge area, and there's so many properties, and I'm always eyeing them up like, you could put a tiny house in that backyard.
That's right. What's the next what's the next big project for you, Amanda?
It's definitely to finish the tiny house, and then I plan on going traveling, visiting all my friends. All my close friends have moved overseas, so I'd really like to go visit them, but I've sort of been trying to finish the tiny house. So yeah, my project is to finish what I started.
Right. And how much do you think the tiny house is going to have cost you, roughly, when it's all done?
So at the moment I'm at 23,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the original budget was about 45,000 to 50,000. Preferably not over that, because I don't have that money.
Sure, sure. So you're hoping to stay within the 50,000 mark.
Yeah, that would be great.
That is great. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your story with us. Stories. Your waste-free journey, your community fridge, which has been a huge success and copied all across the country. And, of course, your current project, the tiny house.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to chat to you and have a yarn.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And the website, again, is wastefreeland.nz for our listeners.